yesterday's news.
Hello and welcome to Old News, the show and podcast which looks at news stories of the day through the papers of yesterday. Something a bit different this week, which came up on the Manon line towards the end of the week. The salt industry. Yes, how many people remember the island did have a salt industry? It vaguely rang bells in my head, but they were pretty vague bells, it has to be said. And whilst it's not necessarily news per se, in as much as I'm not aware of a suggestion the island should start a new salt industry, it did make me think, how much did the salt industry feature in the papers of yore? And, well, yes, they did somewhat. It all seems to date back to around about the turn of the 19th, 20th century. An article in the Ramsey Weekly News from Saturday, April the 9th, 1899. A new industry for Ramsey, or at least a probable new industry for Ramsey as it was headed. The creation of salt works. A deputation from the town commissioner seeks information anent salt works in England and report satisfactorily. The starting of a new industry, the article says, salt works in Ramsey seems to be looming in the near future. As is well known, negotiations for acquiring the shipyard site for the erection of such works, in connection with the operations now being conducted at the Point of Ayre, have been going on for a long time, and now the Salt Company have approached the town board for permission to erect such works as they require on the spot named. As the members of the board were not so well informed upon the manufacturer of salt, it was decided before granting such permission to send a deputation across the water for the purpose of inspecting the salt works and then report to the board. As told at the meeting of the board on Tuesday evening, this deputation consisted of Messrs T. Cowley, R. G. Corkle and G. W. Q. in the surveyor, who left Ringland on Monday the 20th of March and returned home on Saturday, having visited the chief salt works in the north of England for the information of the public. Mr. Corkle related their doings during the week, rising at the invitation of the chairman. He said he thought it quite right the public, through the press, should have full knowledge of how the matter was proceeding. And he goes on at great length. After landing in Liverpool, they visited the Free Library to obtain as much information as they could on this subject. However, they did not get much. I don't know whether there was a library in Douglas then, apparently not, but they found out most of the towns where salt is produced and made plans accordingly. They proceeded from Liverpool to Crewe that night and next day started out for Stafford. And here is what they found, a very large salt works there, apparently. The main concern was the industry going to damage the surrounding environment, it would seem. Quite forward-thinking, really, for 1899 in Ramsey, if they allowed it to go ahead. And by and large, they discovered that it hadn't. They travelled quite broadly around. They went to the finest brine baths in England, around Stafford, and proceeded to Droitwich, where they found salt works in the middle of the town, and in close proximity to them were brine baths, and all round were perhaps, they said, the most beautiful gardens that some of them had ever seen, palms and ferns, trees and plants of all sorts, growing in luxuriance. So far as they could learn from the town clerk and the surveyor, there had never been any complaint, and no injurious effect had ever been noticed from the smoke from the works. The next day they went on to visit the Cheshire Works, proceeding first to Middlewich, and here they said they found not only salt works but also chemical works and the Anglo-Swiss condensed milk works. Sounds a bit like Nestle, doesn't it? The town was given over to manufacture, but like the other places, the health was good and the death rate low. The vegetation was not so much cared for, of course. I don't know quite why, of course, and was not in such a flourishing condition as the other towns. They took some photographs showing, as far as they could, the effects from the manufacture of salt, and left and journeyed to Winsford. In here, B, they thought there was close on 1 million tons of salt produced in a year. That's a lot of salt. And the place was given up altogether to the production of this article. And they decided that, really considering the enormous output, they were surprised at the little effect on the neighbourhood. And they also said, went on to Northwich. And all along they said they noticed a large number of residences of well-to-do people. All round about were large numbers of trees and gardens, and they were really something which they in Ramsey might covet. Northwich too was well timbered, but the town clerk informed them that much salt was not made in town. The industry was carried on at a village named Wincham, around 2 miles from Northwich, and situated on the Weaver. they did a sort of circular route and returned to Fleetwood, where they found the most complete salt works they'd seen. The vegetation was clear and fresh around Fleetwood and prospering. They had the five chimneys at the Fleetwood works under their notice for about 2 to 3 hours, and it was not too much to say that from each there only issued as much smoke as would come from a fire when just lighted in a dwelling house. However, they could not get through the salt works for some reason. They were not allowed to examine the works. Everywhere else, they had the utmost courtesy and kindness shown to them. However, they were sufficiently satisfied that the works constructed on the same principle as at Fleetwood would not be likely to do any harm in Ramsey. In 1899, in the Alabama Times, an article which gives us the many uses of salt. Salt, we are told, puts out a fire in the chimney. I remember my mum doing that when I was a kid. Salt in the oven under baking tins will prevent scorching on the bottom. Salt and soda are excellent for bee stings. Salt and vinegar will remove stains from discoloured teacups. Very true. Salt is a splendid gargle for sore throats. Haven't tried that one, but I seem to recall someone saying it works. Salt thrown on soot which has fallen on the carpet will prevent stain. Salt in whitewash will make it stick. Perhaps not quite so useful these days. Salt put on ink when freshly spilled on a carpet will help to remove the spot. And salt thrown on a coal fire will revive it when low. I remember doing that myself as a kid. And finally, salt, we are told, used in sweeping carpets keeps out the moths. 1899 in the Isle of Man Times. By 1903, the Manx Sun, in the end of January, Saturday, January the 31st, reporting Ramsey News, Manx Salt Company, at the meeting of the Ramsey Town Commissioners on Tuesday, the plans were approved of salt pans proposed to be erected on the shipyard property for the Manx Salt and Alkali Company Limited, and also of pipes for conveying brine to the salt works in the shipyard. Well, my word, there we are, a new industry. By 1914, the First World War, of course, in the Ramsey Courier, the salt business was well underway. On Friday night, we are told, this is Friday, September the 11th, 1914, the Ketch New Leader and Day Star arrived at the salt works. On Saturday, the steamer St. Modan came in to load salt. On Monday, the St. Modan sailed with salt for Glasgow, and the Smack Genie has again taken up her quarters at the top of the old river, her cargo of salt having been transferred to the Day Star, so a booming business by then. However, only 13 or so years later, 1930, Friday, June the 6th in the Ramsey Courier, we read of help for the Manx salt industry. Salt duty, 2 pence per ton less. The position of the Manx salt industry, as carried on by the Manx Salt and Alkali Company, was debated at considerable length in Tynwald on Monday on a resolution proposed by Mr. Alcock that the harbour dues in respect of salt manufactured in the island and shipped by or on any vessel in a harbour should be 2 pence per ton. Mr. Alcock said that the monopoly of salt distribution in England was in the hands of the Salt Union, and the competition was now so severe that the exports of the Ramsey Company had fallen from 10,000 tonnes a year to 4,000 tonnes, a fairly massive drop, 60% is it? The prices were set so fine that contracts were lost to the Manx Company by as little as 3 pence per tonne. To reduce the dues would not injure the island in the long run, he argued, because if the exports were increased again to 10,000 tonnes, a good deal more money would be received in dues than at present. The reason for that was because for every 2 tonnes of salt manufactured, it took a tonne of slack coal. It must have been a smoky business, and that had to be imported into the harbours. A further consideration was that the wharf used by the salt company was constructed by themselves and maintained by themselves and cost the harbour commissioners nothing at all. If that wharf were not used, loading and unloading would have to take place at the quayside and the harbour commissioner's property would be used. There was some debate on this on the basis that if they reduced the class for goods on salt, they'd have to do the same all round. This was the Receiver General arguing against it, and quite a bit of debate followed. Mr. Teer said he was very surprised at the speech of the Receiver General. For many years, they've been trying to revive industries in the island, and this was about the only small industry left. Surely, he said, they would not rather import salt than assist a Manx company to produce salt in the island. There was then a debate about what was the difference between salt in the Isle of Man and salt elsewhere. Mr. Tier said, is the salt comparable with imported salt? There were several calls of yes and some of no. It's a debatable point, said Mr. Tier. An analysis of the salt will be made and the matter set right once and for all. Mr. Kluger said, the trouble is, the salt is too fresh. And Mr. Tier says, well, that's easily got over. And Mr. Shimon thought sufficient details had not been put before the court. They could not pass a resolution of any sort on a general statement. The Manx salt did not contain the same preservatives properties as the Cheshire salt, and it was all right for immediate use, but not for fish. That was required to be used about a year hence. A complicated business, and more complicated than you might have thought. Salt still being produced by the Second World War in 1940, when there's an article which really details how much the effect it had on the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man Times from August the 24th, 1940. The stricken Isle of Man, it starts. This is the close of the third week of August. The towns of the Isle of Man ought to have been swarming with holidaymakers, and the farmers ought to have been making great sales of meat and milk and potatoes. The larger part of the country's income ought to have been gathered in the past month and in the succeeding 2 or 3 weeks. And then the writer goes on to describe how, as one walks along the deserted shopping streets and deserted promenades, the question returns again and again of what one's countrymen will have to live on. And then it goes on to discuss how we'd all have to basically fight together and live together, and talks about Manx produce. Manx produce never far from the news these days, is it? Manx produce salt from the local salt works. Manx produce jam from the local jam factory. Potatoes and vegetables. We all have to do our bit, as was the case during the wars. And finally, and very quickly, something not actually salt-related, but just did make me chuckle somewhat, the difference in attitudes and the way we actually handle things when it comes to, would you call it wokeism? I don't know. I refer you to the Manxman, Saturday, May the 26th, 1900, personal and otherwise. And how it's reported that Mr. Hemming's son, Alfred, who's a student at King William's College, met with an accident on Sunday which might easily have been attended with serious results. He was out with a party of the college boys searching the cliffs for jackdaws' nests when he slipped over a promontory and was hurled headlong a matter of nearly 40 feet into the open sea, narrowly escaping a jutting ledge of rock, contact with which would have been fatal. The boy immediately rose to the surface and swam ashore. He's badly cut about the face, but otherwise unhurt. Mr. Hemming, i.e. his dad, has paid a visit to the college where the boy is in bed under the care of the masters, and has delivered a parental homily appropriate to the occasion. His friends rejoice with him on his boy's fortunate escape. I wonder whether Dad would pop round with an appropriate parental homily if something happened in a similar fashion these days. I'll leave you to debate that one. There'll be more on Sunday morning next week on Old News. Until then, cheerio. You're gonna be yesterday's news.